Ferg has had to leave the room. The image of the roughly held, snugly Marine pooping into an MRE bag has done him in. Now, our buddy Fritz writes in from Arkansas. Now, I'm sure the paranoid prepper crowd, I'm a prepper, he's a prepper, she's a prepper, I'm sure the paranoid prepper crowd is going to see a new market for MREs.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, I realize the playback audio is less than stellar, so we will fade that down right now. Hopefully the mic audio, on the other hand, is considerably better and, not to mention, decidedly less annoying. This is The Horn. It is 3 minutes past the hour of 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, the 6th day of February, 2013. The Horn, of course, being available by clicking Listen Live at headonradionetwork.com. Also available on a number of streaming platforms for mobile devices, things like, TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Radio, the Tuner Internet Radio app on iTunes, in the iTunes Store. And sites like Dar.fm, Streama.com, Roku devices, and podcasting is available via the address at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. You can also get the podcast at iTunes. We used to be on iTunes Radio, and I loved mentioning that. Never did figure out why they did what they did, but they did it anyway. So we deal with it. At any rate, I'm Bob Kincaid. I forgot that, didn't you? And it is Wednesday, and this has been an incredibly busy, busy, busy day. Let me mention this first, as right out of the gate, though. We are only $25 away from meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge from last night. $25 makes that challenge. And then tonight on the table, Lady cab driver Tracy's $50 challenge. So taken all together, we could actually finish off last night's fundraising and tonight's fundraising and be in a somewhat better place than where we are presently. What's the schedule look like these days? Well, let's talk about that. We are either going to head for our mountain home tomorrow or Friday. It all depends on how much work gets done and how quickly we're able to pack up and get out. So we'll either be on the air tomorrow night from here or on the way home. if we're on the way home, there probably won't be a show because it'll take a while to get the house warmed up. It's going to be real cold. And then next week, I believe on the 14th, I fly, 13th, I have to come back up here, 14th, fly to Wisconsin, get back here on the 17th. It's going to be some programs missed for a few days, can't be helped. Going out there to try to assist and engage a little bit in the struggle to save the Pinocchio Hills and save the people of northern Wisconsin from the poisons that come with mountaintop removal. Whatever help I can be, I want to be. I'll be going to a community called Lac Couderay near the town of Hayward in Wisconsin. Participate in a panel discussion. So that will interrupt the otherwise normal, to the extent that normal is anything more than a setting on a dryer, broadcast schedule for that time period. Let's see. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. You can also simply PayPal to bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's the address that's associated with the PayPal account. And what else? You can use the snail mail address if you prefer to do it that way. The snail mail address also being available on the website, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Make checks payable to the Horn, Head On Radio Network, Head On Communications, anything like that. Just don't make them to Bob Kincaid, because Bob Kincaid doesn't get the money. Lord knows, the creditors do. So, does that take care of pretty much? Yeah, that gets most of the housekeeping out of the way. I said that this has been a very, very busy day, and it has. Why has it been a busy day? Well, I mentioned last night that I could tell you what was going to happen today after it happened. These things have to be managed a little bit, and when information is sort of embargoed, you have to honor that. What made this day ever so busy is a good thing. It's a very good thing. The AIC Act has been reintroduced in the Congress of the United States. The AIC Act has been reintroduced in the House of Representatives. It is now known as H.R. 526. H.R. 526. So when you contact your member of the House of Representatives, make sure that that's what you reference, H.R. 526. The Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. And it landed with quite a splash, really. We were very excited yesterday. What Agnes and I spent our day doing was going from office to office to office of all the various and sundry representatives who had signed the act in the previous Congress and making sure that they knew that it was coming so that they would then sign on to the reintroduction. And I'm proud to say that at the beginning of yesterday morning, there were something like 6 or 8 co-sponsors for the bill. This afternoon, when the bill launched, there were 24. And I credit my lovely wife of nearly 20 years with much of that. She is a deep and abiding inspiration to me. The bill was introduced by a brilliant member of the House of Representatives, and it will it pleases among other people our good friend Corey in Louisville to no end to know this. The bill was introduced by Representative John Yarmuth and folks in New York can be proud that it was also co-sponsored by Representative Louise Slaughter. These are the quotes that accompanied the introduction of the bill. Congressman Yarmuth said, "Mountaintop removal coal mining destroys entire ecosystems and contaminates the water supplies in mining communities, making people sick and jeopardizing their safety. This legislation will provide families in these communities the answers they need and the protection they deserve. If it can't be proven that mountaintop removal mining is safe, we shouldn't allow it to continue." Amen. I wish I had a member of Congress with as much moral courage as Representative Yarmuth. Unfortunately, there is no member of the congressional delegation of West Virginia that is capable of carrying his sweat socks. Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, who was born and raised in Harlan County, Kentucky, and knows the ravages of the coal industry. Congresswoman Slaughter, who represents a district in upstate New York near Rochester, said, "Every American has a right to live and work in a community free from environmental health risks. And it is our duty to ensure that this right is not infringed upon by industries that consider community health and environmental protection to be less important than their profit margins. Given the growing field of evidence that people living near mountaintop removal coal mining sites are at an elevated risk for a range of major health problems, we should place a moratorium on further mountaintop removal coal activity until we can ensure the health and safety of families in these communities." Amen. Amen. You can find the press release for the introduction of the bill at Yarmuth, Y-A-R-M-U-T-H, yarmuth.house.gov. And I'm going to post the link right now in the chat room. And there it is. Now I want to share with you the list of heroes, the people who had enough courage to stand up for the poisoned, to stand up for the cancered, to stand up for the heart diseased, to stand up for the birth defected, to stand up bravely. Not just for Appalachia's present, but its future as well. Let's see here. Here we go. If any of these people are your representative, please be so kind as to drop them a note and thank them. If your representative is not on this list, contact them, email them, call them, explain to them the urgency of this bill. John Yarmuth, Louise Slaughter, Earl Blumenauer of Oregon, John Conyers of Michigan, Rush Holt of New Jersey, Raul Grijalva of Arizona, John Sarbanes of Maryland, Jim Moran of Virginia, Donna Edwards of Maryland, Judy Chu of California, Keith Ellison of Minnesota, Charles Rangel of New York, Jared Huffman of California, Barbara Lee of California, Michael Honda of California, Peter DeFazio of Oregon, Matt Cartwright of Pennsylvania, Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut, Lucille Roybal Allard, California, Shelley Pingree of Maine, Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, Jim McDermott of Washington, Eleanor Holmes Norton of D.C., and Jared Polis of Colorado. Those are the list of present heroes. For people whom they may never know, people whom they may never meet, but people who are nonetheless Americans and deserve to be treated as such instead of being poisoned for profit. Like I said, if you are represented by any of these individuals, you have a right to be proud, and they need to be thanked with a letter to the editor and a call to the office. For those names that are not yet on the list, they need to be contacted. So there's the challenge. The hillbillies, we hillbillies have gotten it started. Now it is the job of the rest of America to follow through on America's promises. And we're not just working in the House of Representatives. We need you to contact your senator as well, senators, because we have begun the work on that side of the House. And every senator counts. So the task is defined. We know what the job is. Let's do it. Let's do this for the grassroots. You know, I think it was Psychoticus last night in his, what did he call his letter, a psychotic break with Psychoticus Rex, who said that this bill points the way for other people. And I hope it does. This is the victory we can have. And we are badly in need of a victory. Good God, did you see the story today? Scientists are now pointing out that two of the Great Lakes, are at their lowest levels in, you know, ever. Two of the Great Lakes have hit their lowest water levels ever recorded, according to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Caps more than a decade of below normal rain and snowfall and higher temperatures that boost evaporation. Measurements taken last month show Lake Huron and Lake Michigan have reached their lowest ebb since record keeping began in 1918, and the lakes could set additional records over the next few months. They were 29 inches below their long-term average and had declined 17 inches since January of 2012. But everything's okay, right? No, everything's not okay. We do not want to see the future that we are planning for our progeny. It may take 1,000 years or so, but I saw a map the other day that shows that North America will experience something on the order of 69 feet of sea level rise in the next 1,000 or so years. Oh, well, it's 1,000 years. You know, Jesus, Bob, I mean, come on. Focus. That's the thing. I am focused. And we need a little bit more of that kind of thinking out at the 1,000-year level. You know, our buddy Dr. John is an archaeologist, and he thinks in those 1,000-year chunks. And I get real nerdy, and
and downright wistful and maybe even weepy thinking about human beings at the dawn of the development of the ability to write. That's why I was so incensed when it turned out that that we had destroyed so much of the majestic cultural heritage of the people of Iraq. Clay tablets baked after having been written on in cuneiform that had lasted, great God, 7,000 years and had lasted through conquest, war, famine, blight, good times and bad, and just couldn't survive the hellish reign of George W. Bush. Baked clay tablets returned to their dusty origins in the mad rush to run over the people who live between the rivers Tigris and Euphrates. The ruins of Babylon that had withstood even Alexander himself, had withstood the marches of army after army after army, but began to collapse when we used Babylon for the parking lot for tanks and helicopters. I like that long view stuff. I'm fascinated with it. And so when I see a map that shows me that most of Florida will be gone in 1,000 years, that the Chesapeake Bay will have completely merged with the Atlantic Ocean and Delaware will be no more, with New York City potentially underwater like some sort of Atlantis from non-natural processes that we inflicted upon ourselves. All of us will by then have gone on to that born from which no man returneth. But many of us at least consider a broad general kinship to humanity. And it is grief-inducing to think of Miami sunk beneath the wave, of New Orleans no longer existing, of Mobile gone, Corpus Christi gone, Boston, New York, Philly perhaps gone, of the tides lapping at the Atlantic seashore of Washington, D.C., where now I sit. It is deeply disturbing, worrisome. And the thing is, it does not have to be this way. It can be stopped. I know probably people don't think about the AIC Act in terms of climate change, but there is an element there. Pushing back against the acquisition of coal acquired not for anyone's personal security or national security, but simply because it can be sold at a profit that then benefits primarily the banking institutions that finance the bond issues and the executives who rub elbows with those bankers. I am. I'm going back to Wisconsin next week and a half. Next week, yeah. And the thought of the Great Lakes eventually drying up and becoming great valleys, holes in the earth. That's intolerable. 17 inches lost in Lake Michigan and Lake Huron since 2012. 17 inches in 12 months. It's about an inch and a half a month. Very near. Worth a little bit of concern, perhaps. Meanwhile, a certain segment of this population is far more concerned with what? Whether Hillary Clinton had a facelift? Yeah, that popped up on Radio Rwanda. Another segment of the population concerned with whether what? Concerned with whether the Boy Scouts should continue to engage in wholesale bigotry. We have some priority problems among a significant subsegment of our body politic. I ran across the Great Lakes story over at Charlie Pierce's wonderful politics blog at Esquire.com. He quotes the report, and it says, "The low water in the Great Lakes has caused heavy economic losses by forcing cargo ships to carry lighter loads, leaving boat docks high and dry and damaging fish spawning areas. And vegetation has sprung up in newly exposed shoreline bottomlands, a turnoff for hotel customers who prefer sandy beaches." It's going to be a real big turnoff when it's a few feet lower. But there will always be, you know, the more ends you have always with you. This is Wednesday, after all. The more ends you have always with you. The sea levels are rising. The Great Lakes are lowering. But, I mean, we don't have an interconnected system or anything. No. Because, well, the right wing thinks that we own all this. Yeah, it's ours. God gave us dominion over it. Right? Sure. No, it's prayer meeting Wednesday. And hard to get away from a story like this. And you know, there's a ton of stuff to talk about this evening, without a doubt. But this is just creepy, creepy, creepy. The information is. I guess it's hopeful, though,
that someone has stepped away, gotten out of the filth, gotten out of the swamp. You know, that's kind of rough on swamps to be comparing them to right-wing religion industry freaks. The story from today, the Today Show, says, from the time she was 8, Libby Phelps Alvarez traveled the country protesting funerals. Like other members of the family-based Westboro Baptist Church, she often crashed the funerals of fallen soldiers. They think that they're fighting for a nation that supports homosexuality, Alvarez told Today, explaining the rationale behind the protests. Now she has left Westboro Baptist, and she's experiencing a culture that she was never allowed to participate in. The Today Show story mentioning the fact that she does things like getting her hair trimmed now, or having pierced ears. And of these followers of Christ, she says quite bluntly, plainly, there was a point when we started praying for people to die. I didn't actually do that, but I was around when they did it. Praying for people to die so that they could go and have a reason to manifest their hatred once again. The example, one of the classic example, coming from a Westboro Twitter feed. Westboro will picket Sandy Hook Elementary School to sing praise to God for the glory of his work in executing his judgment. She literally had to sneak away from the church. She said, I was terrified I was never going to see my family again. And maybe not. She said, my aunt emailed me and said that nobody wants to talk to me anymore. Pathetic. But congratulations to Libby Phelps Alvarez for having taken the first step in the long journey of recovery from the religion industry. And then, then there's this. It's the story, sorry, Tennessee listeners. It's a story out of Tennessee of a dog owner. A dog owner who could not tolerate his dog. A dog at a Tennessee shelter was set to be euthanized after its owner left it there because he thought the animal was gay. The owner of the dog caught his dog, saw his dog, witnessed his dog doing what dogs do, humping on another male dog. The dog was left at the rabies control shelter in Jackson, Tennessee, this past week. Quote, not because he's mean or tears things up, but because his owner says he's gay. He hunched another male dog, so his owner threw him away because he refuses to have a gay dog. The happy ending to this story is that the dog has been adopted The dog has been renamed Elton. And that the dog is pretty scared of everything, but loved a car ride. The article notes that homosexual behavior has been recorded in more than 1,000 different animal species. But a veterinarian noted it's likely that Elton was simply displaying typical dominance behavior when mounting another male dog, rather than being gay. This story is disturbing on, about 1,012,000 levels. Starting with the sick bastard who would try to have a dog killed because of a matter of his own twisted perception. More disturbing still, that there are people, and, you know, in a nation of some 300s of millions of people, it's unlikely that there is one person who is, no, there's lots of people, I wouldn't have a gay dog neither. Dear Jesus. They understand nothing and perceive even less, unless it is through the lens of their own bias. So the dog, the dog deserved to die. Not. But that's okay. Well, it's not okay. Sickening. The ABC News story pointing out there are plenty of mammals, including giraffes, dolphins, and bonobos, an ape species closely related to chimps and humans, that have gay sex for pleasure, according to the book Biological Exuberance by Bruce Beginney. And everybody knows about the penguins. Enter the Catholic League, and Bill Donahue, who once got so angry about a sculpture, a chocolate Jesus, where Jesus had actual chocolate anatomy under his chocolate loincloth, that the man had to flee in fear for his life because of the threats that Bill Donahue got ginned up against him. So enter Bill Donahue in the story of the dog that nearly died for being gay. The moral of the story is, being gay is not only a bonus for humans these days, it is a definite plus for dogs as well. As for straights, the lonely, and the disabled, that's another story altogether. Because, see, poor pasty Bill Donahue thinks he's being persecuted. Because gay people aren't being persecuted. Poor Bill Donahue and the Catholic League are unable to live in a world where the absence of persecution of one group, it does not necessarily mean that another group is by definition persecuted. He lives in a world where there's no, where everything has to have an equal and opposite reaction. If gay people aren't beaten to death simply for being gay, then that means that somewhere, some Christian is being beaten to death for being a Christian. It does not survive intellectual scrutiny. get this, talking about the dog. The place where Elton was dropped, Euthanasia, Jackson, Tennessee, encourages dog adoption, but it also promotes dog euthanasia. Not, however, in Elton's case. The shelter has no stomach for putting dogs down on the basis of sexual orientation. It must be said, though, that the shelter is not exactly inclusive in its policies. To wit, had poor Elton not been identified as a homosexual, his heterosexuality would not have been enough to save his hide. And, of course, there's nothing that suggests that the opposite saved him either. They simply try to get dogs adopted out before they put them down, instead of putting them down. But these followers of the Prince of Peace, well, they can't live in that world. Bizarre, bizarre, bizarre. Kill it. Then again, remember a few years ago, the man in Florida, naturally, who beat his 5-year-old son to death because he was afraid he might be getting the queer. Really. Fritz writing in from Arkansas regarding Elton, gay dog in Tennessee. I would venture, says Fritz, I would venture to say that the former owner of this dog is a believer. Oh, I wouldn't take the bet, Fritz. It's almost a sure thing. The only fun in wagering is if it's possible, even remotely possible, you can win the bet. No, I'm sure that absolutely no. God fearing. Jim writing in, he says, Fred Phelps and company, having seen the actions of Fred Phelps, his hateful daughter, and their actions, I cannot understand their cruelty. As for the gay dog, put that SOB in a shelter or a death camp himself. The owner, right, yeah. They walk among us. You know, that guy doesn't have to walk around town with a T-shirt on or something tattooed on his forehead that says, I'm so damn stupid that I think a dog that humps another dog of the same gender should be murdered, killed, put down, euthanized. Man, that'd be a hell of a lot to put on a T-shirt, wouldn't it? No. He just gets up in the morning, goes to work, comes home, eats his lunch. Cut down trees, eat my lunch, I go to the lavatory. Right? He's a lumberjack and he's okay. And nobody's any the wiser. You might be standing next to him over in Jackson, Tennessee. You might be standing next, you know, I think our dear friend Granny T is from out in the western end of Tennessee, and I worry. This really is, this little community we've built, really is a bit of a family. And I fret about the fact that you could be standing in line there waiting for a horse meat burger from Burger King or something to roll off the line and thinking everything's A-okay and perfectly fine, only you're standing next to a moron who would kill a dog for being a homo dog. Wait. Homo means man. Homo sapiens. Homo, in the case of homosexual, means same sex. Hetero means different. Trying to work through this.
What would you... Homo caninical? Homo canininsis? What's the language for idiocy like this? I'm licked. Dr. John pointing out, I hope nobody ever tells those jerks about bonobos. The typical form of bonobo sexual behavior is female-female. I put typical in quotes because bonobos have sex for any reason or no reason in every possible combination of ages, sexes, and positions. Bonobos are our closest relative, even closer to us than chimps. Most people have never heard of them because they're rarely in zoos or on nature programs. Their behavior would shock the suburbs. Some suggest we can see our own evolutionary past in bonobos. Compared with chimps, bonobos are peaceful, female-centric, and they settle conflict with sex rather than by hitting each other with sticks. Maybe that's the sort of behavior that was favored by our evolutionary history. At the very least, a model we might should aspire to. I hate you. I hate you too. Let's have sex.
Thumbs up on that.
Yeah, me too, Agnes.
Oh,
Agnes said thumbs up on that one. Really. Then again, it does have its drawbacks, I think. You know, we think back to the attempts to end the Vietnam War and the idea of Henry Kissinger emulating the bonobos and getting it on with some North Vietnamese. And not because, this ain't that scene from Being There I Like to Watch. This is not that, no. And it's not about, no, it's about Henry Kissinger. Ew. No. Margaret, can you make the noise?
Ew.
Ew. Ew. Ew. Ew. Henry Kissinger sex. Ew.
Oh, God.
Yeah. By the way, a note coming in from Kevin in Colorado Springs. He says, Jared Polis is a real stand-up guy to us progressives in Colorado. I'm proud that at least one of our Colorado congresspersons signed on as co-sponsor to the AIC Act. Quick question, how many Dems and Republicans signed on as co-sponsors? Well, here's the answer. 24 Democrats, no Republicans. I'm trying to find a Republican out there. There's got to be, you know, there has to be one. One. This feels like an exercise from Genesis or something. There has to be one Republican out there that actually cares about little unborn Appalachian babies. One. Somewhere. Don't know. We'll find out. Kevin continues, Elton's a lucky dog, though it may not seem like it. He will or has traded in a bigoted owner who would probably have treated him badly for a new one who will give him a loving home, regardless of whether or not he is gay. I think animals just don't draw the distinctions that humans draw. Let's see. Also in regard to the AIC Act, Marty says, he has written to Congresswoman Doris Matsui. He says, my words to Congressman Matsui, I write in regards to the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, newly reintroduced as H.R. 526 in this Congress. I am concerned about the effect of the methods on coal extraction and the methods that coal extraction has on the health and lifestyles of my fellow Americans. Though they aren't here in California, their health and well-being should not be any lesser of a priority. I ask you to please support and co-sponsor this important legislation in this session of Congress. Michael writing in
Subject line, Adolf Donahue. You ever seen a picture of Bill Donahue? Now imagine a little Charlie Chaplin mustache on him. And you'll understand why I'm having a hard time keeping it together right now. The live studio audience is giggling again. Still, Michael writes, Bill Donahue is a monster, calling for the genocide of all gay pets. Is there another way to interpret his comments? No. That's pretty much what he was saying. And that I guess that hetero pets are somehow persecuted. Hmm. Oh, and by the way, we are, thank you very kindly, $10 closer to finishing up the challenge, last night's Shirley's Wisconsin challenge. We are now $15 from finishing that, and then we can get started on Lady Cab Driver Tracy's challenge from last night. Oh, goody, I conjured Granny T. Regarding Gay Elton. Hi, Bob. Welcome to my hometown. If they had a gay control shelter here, well, we won't go there. I'm sure you get the picture. Very thankful I live out in the boonies, no neighbors from hell next door. Ever read the book The Sociopath Next Door? Don't waste your time. Just look around. Hello and good thoughts to you, your family, and the Horn family. Signed, Gran. Thank you, Granny T. And again, wait a minute. Don't be thinking that this is a Tennessee problem. The stupid pervades this nation. Clayton, the militant sociologist, writes in, as a proud owner of a retired guide dog who humped my legs when he was young, he was never punished for it. I realized he was trying to dominate me. The relationship has worked out. Neither of us has turned gay, although we do sleep together. Wonder what the right-wing fanatics would think about that. Well, they'd probably have to go off in a closet. It's not so much what they'd think about it, but, well, they don't have to go to a closet. They pretty much got one that travels with them, don't they? Yeah. My head's not all right. I mean, just for a second. Now, don't try to get into the mindset. Just try to ponder it. Now, here's a dog, and you like him. Well, you know, he's your dog. Dogs are special. If one believes in a deity, then one has to say that dogs are a gift from God. Mark Twain said that if heaven was gained by merit instead of grace, the dogs would go in and we would stay out. Mark Twain said he was inclined to think that he could be the friend of any person who liked cats. Says a lot about Mark Twain, doesn't it? Eminently decent soul. No, just trying to. So you come home from work and the dog's there and he's all excited because the only thing that he's been thinking about all day is how happy he would be when he sees you again. And he runs up to you, and he puts his head in your lap, and he looks at you with those eyes, and you're like, yeah, that's a pretty good dog. I got a good dog. I like my dog. And you run out, run around a little bit,
And he runs outside, and there happens to be another dog. And after all of that welcoming, that wonderful warmth and love that dogs pour out, he humps another male dog. And suddenly, your mindset changes. You know, he's got to die. I mean, he's a good dog and everything, but he's got to die. I just can't stand to have no homosexuals, whether it's a dog or a person or a cat or a hamster. I can't be around no homosexuals. Kind of like that San Francisco 49ers player. And what was his name? Who announced via Twitter, "I can't do that sweet stuff," in saying that he would not tolerate a gay teammate. Yeah, I can't tolerate that sweet stuff neither. Even if it's from a dog. Can't tolerate it. It's unbearable. Right? That just bumbleflubs me. I can't understand the brain or what passes for one that works that way. Can you? No. Tried. Sorry. Just can't. So looky here. We are three... Oh, knock wood. That's kind of a veneer here. Let me hit myself in the head. We're about 2 minutes from actually having gotten an hour of programming in, which is deeply gratifying after some of the problems we've had. That's wonderful. So since we didn't get to it last night, we will give a listen to the Tuesday night edition of the Green News Report. The date will be different, but the news will still be fresh. We are getting very close, by the way, as noted, to meeting the last of last night's challenge, $15 away, and looking for a total of $65 tonight. And then Tracy, the lady cab driver, will turn that $50 into $100 with her challenge. So we'll take a break. If you are so inclined, please hit the PayPal button. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Okay, I thought music was going to play.
Well, I jinxed us. So we've got at least microphone audio. I think this does not portend well for Skype or anything such as that. I'll work on that. But we'll take we are going to take a little break. There'll just be silence. So please bear with me. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
It's Tuesday, February 5, 2013.
Will we sit on the sidelines and fall behind? Or will we play to win the clean energy race?
Energy Secretary Stephen Chu steps down.
High gas prices are like a tax straight out of your paycheck.
Record high gas prices mean big oil profits. U.S. carbon emissions fall. Plus,
we could have saved 500 million bottles on game day alone.
The Super Bowl ad you didn't get to see.
All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Well, as is obvious to the viewers at home, we have a power outage here at the Superdome.
Oh, great. Thanks, Obama. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Dez, the lights went out in the middle of the Super Bowl. I don't really know what happened, but I'm pretty sure it's got to be Barack Obama's fault.
Well, yeah, that is essentially what the right-wing media is saying. It was the night the lights went out in NOLA. Officials still don't know why the power went out in half of the Superdome in New Orleans on Sunday, only that sensors at the dome detected an anomaly that tripped a breaker. But the crack right-wing investigative media was on it. On Twitter and elsewhere, they blamed everything from Obama to new energy-efficient LED lights that were installed on the exterior of the dome. Except the power outage was inside the dome, while the new LED lights outside the dome remained on. The Super Bowl also helped save energy. It seems counterintuitive, but electricity consumption actually falls during the game. According to a new analysis, electricity use during last year's game dropped an estimated 7% across the whole country. That's because people tend to watch the game in groups, meaning energy consumption is concentrated in fewer places. Too bad we can't play the Super Bowl weekly, huh? And one Super Bowl commercial has gained notoriety for being rejected by network CBS. Now, CBS won't comment on why it rejected the ad by at-home soda maker SodaStream, but critics say it might be because SodaStream took aim at the game's sponsors, Coke and Pepsi, and directly criticized the waste generated by hundreds of millions of discarded plastic soft drink bottles.
With SodaStream, we could have saved 500 million bottles on game day alone.
If it was because Coke and Pepsi were also both seen in the ad, seems a bit hypocritical. We see ads from Coke and Pepsi during the Super Bowl all the time. Coke shows Pepsi, Pepsi shows Coke. But I guess it's a two-party duopoly when it comes to the cola wars.
Yeah, critics have called on CBS to come clean and explain their standards. The controversy, though, has boosted the ad anyway with millions of online views.
Good.
It's not enough for our country to invent clean energy technologies. We have to make them and we have to use them. Invented in America, made in America, and sold around the world. That's how we'll create good jobs and lead in the 21st century.
That was Energy Secretary Stephen Chu in 2011. The Nobel Prize-winning physicist has announced he will step down. As Secretary of Energy, he oversaw investment in the nation's domestic renewable energy industry, including a doubling of renewable energy projects across the country on public lands in just 4 years. In his departure letter to employees, Chu was blunt on the importance of clean energy to the economy and taking action on climate change, saying, quote, Ultimately, we have a moral responsibility to the most innocent victims of adverse climate change. Those who will suffer the most are the people who are the most innocent, the world's poorest citizens, and those yet to be born. Unfortunately, the White House kept Chu from being this blunt about climate change during his term.
All of these energy-related officials who are leaving seem to be leaving behind these letters on the way out to say, by the way, you better do something about climate change.
But the good news is Chu's programs are already delivering. Carbon dioxide emissions in the United States have fallen to their lowest levels since 1994.
Why?
That's according to a new report by Bloomberg New Energy Finance. They say that emissions fell due to the doubling of renewable energy installations in just 4 years, plus utilities dropping dirty coal and switching to cheap natural gas because of fracking, and from energy efficiency upgrades to commercial buildings. Now, the U.S. is now more than halfway towards Obama's target of cutting emissions by 17% below 2005 levels, and that's in spite of Republican obstruction in Congress.
In spite of the inability to pass a cap-and-trade bill over the past 5 years, which, I should remind you, Republicans used to favor.
Yep. Finally, poor, poor big oil. 2012 wasn't a record year for oil profits.
Snarky of you.
Yes, but it wasn't too shabby. Big oil earned well over $100 billion in pure profit in 2012, helped out by consumers who paid record high gas prices at the pump, despite a drilling boom in the U.S. that the right-wing media said would lower gas prices.
And they were able to make those kind of profits even after canceling the welfare entitlements that we give to them?
Oh, wait, that's right. We didn't. We still give them $4 billion a year in subsidies and tax breaks.
Lucky them. And lucky you. You can check out that story and the ones we couldn't get to today at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, you can download us anytime via iTunes, listen to us on your mobile device via TuneIn or the Stitcher Radio app, find us and like us on the Facebook, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Shapes and new rhythms. There are signs that we can learn to place over the heavens to predict how long we'll burn, how long will I last? Can I turn up the heat? What star am I circling? What's circling me? Am I ever my flow? My lack of control, turning on, turning off, saying yes, but playing no.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
It is 12 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It is the second hour of this broadcast for the sixth day of February 2013. And just so you'll know, I just love that song. That is by Sean Hayes, and it's called A Thousand Tiny Pieces. And it, every now and then you run across a song that just speaks to you.
Yeah, tell them about it.
And that's one of them.
This
was one of those moments where I'm not sure if I was, I got a little cooler or a little nerdier in Ferg's sight. I heard the song performed live by Sean Hayes out in San Francisco at the memorial for Becky Tarbottom, and was deeply moved, and came back home and looked it up and played it for Ferg, and he went, "Oh my God, Dad, yeah, that's Sean Hayes." And I told him how I knew about it. He was, "Really?" Yeah.
Didn't even know who you were talking about.
No, didn't have, had no idea. But I do now. And that song is just, well, I love it. The lyric is, the music is deceptively simple, and the lyric is, well, there's nothing deceptive about that. It is incredibly thought-provoking. A Thousand Tiny Pieces by Sean Hayes. Meanwhile, from the funny department in the Head On Radio Network chat room, if you've never been there, you really should pop in. Blake in Madison, on the way to the break, said while I was trying to get the music to play, said, "I guess I'll just play Who Let the Dogs Out of the Closet for bumper music." Oh, that was good. Email coming in. Dan writes in and says, "Hey, big guy. My dogs and I have exchanged bodily fluids." The subject line, "The gay and my dogs." "My dogs and I have exchanged bodily fluids many times. We must be gay. Their saliva-infested mouths have licked many of my bloody scrapes and cuts over the years. They even lick my mouth and try their best to make gulp penetration." Yikes! Yeah, I think that just falls under the general category of love. And Jim gets it. Kill shelters. Owner of gay dog who has probably bricked up his home's back door. Jim says, "Have been to these kill shelters and am no longer able to abide the sight. Ever since, I've done everything in my limited ability to adopt and seen to the adoption of many. The two dearest creatures in my life came from wanting to show compassion. I have been blessed with their company. And then this, a connection I never would have made, but Jim did, and it is profound. He says, congrats on the progress of the ACE Act, as humans are as important as our four-legged friends. Every day, people are placed in kill shelters. by virtue of their location and circumstance of birth. Wow. But it's the truth. It's the truth. If you live in Appalachia, if you live near a mountaintop removal site, you are in a sacrifice zone. And whether it be you, your elders, or your beloved little ones, everyone is equally available for unwitting, involuntary sacrifice in the name of unholy profit. That is the gravity that surrounds the AIC Act. And that is why we so desperately need your help in getting co-sponsors for it. Republican or Democrat. Like I said, there's got to be a Republican out there that actually cares about unborn Appalachians. Appalachian Americans. Right? Yeah. Marty with a question. Says, isn't SodaStream also made in the occupied territories? I'm not sure if it's in the... I know SodaStream is an Israeli company. And by the way, big thanks. Big thanks out. We have met both the fundraising challenge for Shirley's Wisconsin challenge of last night, and we have met Tracy's Lady Cab Driver Challenge. Thank you to all of you. Thank you this evening to James. Thank you to Kath. Thank you to Sal. And thank you very much to Keith. This is how we keep it going. And if you want to help out too and help us maybe get a little ahead on the night, that would be wonderful. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the snail mail address. Now, where do we go in this hour? Wherever we go, there is no doubt that it will be strange. Because it is Wednesday night. There's lots to work with. I mentioned Bill Donahue. And the Bill Donahue comment on the gay dog story. The man is not real. It doesn't operate on the same plane of reality as you and I. But he is not unique. Not by any stretch of the imagination. That story that I heard last night set me on my ear. The idea of and Jack in Shreveport emailed me about it. He heard the same thing. A pregnant woman died due to a pulmonary embolism, and the twin fetuses she was carrying died with her. A sad enough circumstance as it was. But she died at a Catholic hospital.
Yeah.
And the argument is that she died as a result of medical negligence. At least in part. She was 8.5 months along. Maybe, I don't know, I may have some of the facts backwards. This story comes from the Laramie Boomerang online. It's an Associated Press story. It was a startling assertion that seemed an about-face from church doctrine. A Catholic hospital arguing in a Colorado court that twin fetuses that died in its care were not, under state law, human beings. When the 2-year-old court filing surfaced last month, it triggered an avalanche of criticism because the legal argument seemed to plainly clash with the church's centuries-old stance that life begins at conception. Well, we need to back up on that one there. The church's stance on life begins at conception is not centuries old. If I recall correctly, it dates back about 80 years. But anyway, it is also now fueling an already raging debate in Colorado and beyond about whether fetuses should have legal rights, and if so, what kind. The story continues. On Monday, the hospital and the state's bishops released a statement acknowledging it was morally wrong to make the legal argument. Because, in other words, they got caught. Because, well, in any other circumstance, the church would happily argue that that was a little baby fully vested with all the rights of a human, until the church's money became involved. Back in 1986, a federal court ruled that fetuses are indeed people for purposes of wrongful death lawsuits in Colorado, but state courts have offered conflicting views. This all happened at St. Thomas More Medical Center. Irony, we talked about Tom. St. Thomas More Medical Center in Canyon City, Colorado, a few hours south of Denver. A wrongful death lawsuit filed by a husband who lost his pregnant wife. Lori Stodgehill was 28 weeks into her pregnancy when, on New Year's Day 2006, she began vomiting and feeling short of breath. Her husband Jeremy took her to the emergency room at St. Thomas More, where Stodgehill collapsed and went into cardiac arrest. Doctors and nurses tried to revive her, but she was declared dead from a pulmonary embolism. No one tried to remove the fetuses via an emergency cesarean section, and they perished too. 28 weeks. Living outside the womb would have been challenging at 28 weeks. Attorneys for Thomas More Hospital filed a motion to dismiss the case because the plaintiffs couldn't prove the negligent care killed Lori Stodgehill and her fetuses, and the lawyers also argued that, quote, under Colorado law, a fetus is not a person, and plaintiff's claim for wrongful death must therefore be dismissed. And the trial judge agreed and dismissed the case. The trial judge said that a fetus has to be born alive to have a legal claim. That lawyers for the plaintiff are now asking the Colorado State Supreme Court to hear the case and issue a ruling. So the church is in what we might call a sticky wicket. On the one hand, they're very happy to have the court rule that the little fetuses were not human beings, because that keeps the church from having to write the check. On the other hand, now that they've gotten the favorable ruling that they want, the bishops don't have any problem whatsoever coming a running out and saying, oh, that was a deeply immoral argument for us to make. It would have been deeply immoral for us to have to write the check, too, so double plus good bonus, right? In their Monday statement, Denver Archbishop Samuel J. Aquila, Colorado Springs Bishop Michael Sheridan, and Pueblo Bishop Fernando Isern said, quote, Catholic healthcare institutions are and should be held to the high standard of Jesus Christ himself. One might argue it's a bit late for that, really. A lawyer writing a brief on behalf, an amicus brief on behalf of the Colorado Trial Lawyers Association said, to die by the wrongful conduct of a stranger, you don't have to be a walking, talking, full person. The duty owed by a stranger to the mother and the unborn child and the mother's own decisions about the fetus's future are entirely different, which is true. Then there was a witness by the name of Heather Sorovic. She told the committee about how a drunk driver injured her last year and killed her 8.5-month unborn son, Brady. At the hospital, the emergency staff removed him from her body and dressed his corpse in infant clothes. Prosecutors could not file vehicular manslaughter charges because Brady was not legally a person. Fortunately for Ms. Sorovic, it happened in Colorado. Otherwise, had she had to have the deceased baby removed from her in, say, Alabama, she could have been serenaded by upstanding followers of the Prince of Peace who sang to another woman in a similarly horrifying situation a couple of months back, "Happy Birthday, Dead Baby," as she walked into the Women's Reproductive Health Care Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Her husband had to be restrained to keep from, going all Roman on those followers of the Prince of Peace. Jeebus. Morally wrong to make the legal argument, except for the fact that it saved the hospital a bunch of dough. So thanks to Jack in Shreveport for that update. Clayton, the militant sociologist, writing in, he says, in 1975, congratulations is the subject line, in 1975 I received my M.A. in Appalachian Sociology. But at the same time, I tried to work with numerous other people, including the Appalachian Council in Cincinnati, to create a national movement. We didn't have the tools, we didn't have the money, of course, but we worked and we worked and we worked. In 1978, Clayton says, I lost my eyesight. I lost my eyesight due to a disease problem in the Appalachian region called toxoplasmosis. I just happened to get it in my eyes before I was born. Consequently, I had to drop out of that little movement, and other people were not able to follow up, so the Appalachian movement in central Ohio died. Bob, thanks for your great work as a native Appalachian. As a sociologist, you make me cry. Thank you for those wonderful tears, Clayton says. Congratulations on your recent successes. May they continue. Signed, the militant Appalachian sociologist, Clayton. Thank you, Clayton. And we really, it feels a little bit like a success getting the bill reintroduced. But we really do understand that there will be nothing that we can actually call success until the bill has been passed and signed by the President of the United States into law. And like I said, that's where the rest of America comes in. We need to spread the word and help people understand that we hillbillies are just as American as the rest of the country. Jeremy, writing from Vermont, with a note for Jim. He says, please pass along to Jim and the rest of the Horn, Vermont doesn't have a single kill shelter from border to border. There's a decided effort to be civilized in Vermont. And the irony is not lost on me of that right-wing Texan who was hollering about wanting to secede because he didn't want to share a nation. He didn't want to be in the same nation as, there you go, Vermont. By the way, where the AIC Act is concerned, I would be deeply remiss if I did not also thank all the many national allies we have. Press releases came out today from our friends at Earth Justice, with a contact also from the Sierra Club, and a release went out from our dear friends at the Rainforest Action Network. In fact, let me go over here and look real quick. I think there will be a blog post going up at RAN very soon about the AIC Act. I wrote it. So have a look at RAN.org. The blog is called The Understory, which is really a cool name for a blog. The Understory, all the dirt that's fit to post. Have a look over there. You'll see the blog post in a bit, and they'll appreciate the traffic. Now, back to, okay, so coffee break's over, back on our heads. Sorry, I'm just trying to pick out where I want to go. We talked a good bit about the AIC Act. I should point out that I saw my junior senator on the street today. Howdy, Senator Joe. Huh? Yeah. Ferg waved at him. Yeah. Down in Kentucky, Stan. Not the free state of Louisville, mind you. I'm paying attention, Corey. There's a new holiday on the calendars. The Monday of the fourth week in August. Do I even need to look? The Monday of the fourth week in August, we can all celebrate. Well, if you're in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan, you have to celebrate it. The Monday of the fourth week in August is Coal Truck Driver Appreciation Day. Maybe we can all just breathe some exhaust fumes and coal dust in our profound appreciation for coal truck drivers. So there's that. And then this. our reading for tonight, since it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. You remember Gun Appreciation Day. Well, this being Prayer Meeting Wednesday, I have here in front of me a recently discovered fragment, the Gospel of Our Lord according to St. N.R.A. for the Feast of National Gun Appreciation Day. While Jesus was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer Judas has given them a sign saying, "The one I will kiss is the man. Arrest him." At once he came up to Jesus and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. And Jesus said to him, "Friend, do what you are here to do." Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and arrested him. You might recall we went over this passage not too long back, and lo and behold, cranky old Ron Paul even tweeted this passage in relation to the sniper who called himself a Christian and yet had killed in excess of 150 people as a sniper and was in Iraq and said his real kill count was way up above 200. Christian. And Jesus said to him, "Friend, do what you're here to do." Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and arrested him. Suddenly, one of those with Jesus put his hand on his sword, drew it, and struck the slave of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Nothing in there disapproving of slavery. Jesus said to him, "Put your sword back into his place, for all those who take the sword will perish by the sword. But those who carry an assault rifle shall never perish, but have eternal life." And lo, the Lord stood his ground, drew out his AR-15. He smote his enemies and a betrayer in a miraculously short amount of time by the power of his high-capacity magazine. Then Jesus said, "There will be gun control and rumors of gun control, but they do not know the day and hour when an assault rifle will be needed to defend ourselves. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and shot the thief dead. Therefore, you also must be ready. But fear not, even though I must leave you, be glad for it. For if I do not go, then I cannot send you to the Advocate that will guide you into all truth and security." This does come with some footnotes. One, clearly, given his later suicide, Judas was mentally ill, and his deranged mind led him to betray Christ. If only Jesus had been able to screen his followers through a national database of the mentally ill and thus predict his betrayal before it happened, then the tragedy of Gethsemane would have been prevented. Two, the gay agenda contributes to mental illness, and Judas's willingness to kiss another man in public shows how homosexuality undermines basic understandings of morality. Three, in the actual gospel, Jesus heals the slave's ear and ends his quotation that those who live by the sword will die by the sword. We at the NRA and other gun lobbies believe this to be the work of a later redactor. We cannot imagine Jesus being willing to die without a fight. There's only power and strength in violence. Moreover, this false gospel of nonviolence and love triumphing over evil contradicts our work at the NRA. We know that only a good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun. So we have added an ending that we believe better reflects who we want Jesus to be. We are convinced that had Jesus been born today, he most certainly would be in favor of guns, would have carried assault rifles, turned his disciples into a militia, and would never have been crucified. This inclination is clearly seen in his inclusion of a zealot in his inner circle. Now he might have been mowed down in a firefight, but at least he would have stood his ground and would have gone down fighting like a real man. Some causes are worth not just dying for, but fighting for. Today, so that scripture may be fulfilled, unnamed gun lobbies in conjunction with manufacturers are announcing a new assault rifle and high-capacity magazine called The Advocate and are offering it at cost to all public and private schools throughout the United States in the wake of tragedy. The Advocate will never leave nor forsake you, neither will it jam. Pretty accurate for where they are, isn't it? Oh, by the way, just going back for a moment, because I've got an email here from Tracy. And thank you, Tracy. for the challenge. She said, by the way, add $25 more to the challenge. She said, dearest Bob, as I am sitting in my cab listening to you on Stitcher, yes, I'm finally learning to use how to use my radio apps, my wonderful girlfriend called me to tell me there was a story about Elton the Gay on Inside Edition. She being a huge dog person, she, of course, was pissed, but then she was elated when she heard the dog was not only adopted, but the named Elton after Sir Elton John. You gotta love that. I told her I had just heard the story on your show, and she was impressed. I told her not to be impressed by that, but to be impressed by the fact that the mainstream media covered it. This is why I love your show, Bob, and the Green News. We get information that really matters. You know things like climate change, fair labor practices, clean water, and an end to mountaintop removal, amongst other things. Not whether or not Hillary Clinton had a facelift or Kim Kardashian as a slut. The latter is so true. Yeah, you'll get email for that, Tracy. So, Bob, please keep up the work and keep on pushing. Love you more than my luggage. Signed, Tracy, a.k.a. Lady Cab Driver, who added another $25 to her $50 challenge from last night. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you. Oh, by the way, I love the little factoids we get along the way. This from Jim. The name Rand, as in Ayn Rand, because Ayn Rand was not Ayn Rand's name. It was some incredibly difficult to pronounce Russian name. And I'm not talking about difficult to pronounce like Dostoevsky or Karenina. No, no, no. I can do those. The name Rand that she took was taken from the portable Remington Rand typewriter. Oddly enough, the same type of portable upon which Hitler's two books were typed. Talk about irony, says Jim. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, and by the way, if he gets his way, remember the story of the Idaho lawmaker from a couple of nights ago? God, what was she going crazy over? Yeah. She said that this is the one who said the Affordable Care Act was just like the Jews being sent to the concentration camps and the whole, yeah, that crazy lady. Apparently they've got crazy to spare in Idaho. Because it turns out that if one lunatic Idaho lawmaker has his way, children will not be able to graduate high school in said state without having first read, and I personally think a law like this is just it's a manifestation of child abuse, without having first read Atlas Shrugged. Really? Ew. Wait, what?
Ew. L.
Yeah.
You can't even do it.
Here we're going to hear the real, okay. So a child will not be able to graduate high school in Idaho without having read Atlas Shrugged.
Ew.
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 Right. Icky. Just icky. So, okay, now getting back, the story of the man who was worried about that his dog had a case of the gay, well, that was Jackson, Tennessee, as Granny T confirmed. It's not that long a drive to go from Jackson, Tennessee, across the state line down into Mississippi Stan. And I think it was Beth who pointed this story out on my Facebook page, at which point I went, ew. I'm working on that work. That's just such a handy little noise. No, it's not a far drive at all to get down into Mississippi Stan. And this is the story of State Representative William Tracy Arnold. He's an from Boonville, Mississippi Stan. And he's deeply concerned. And maybe, who know, for all I know, he travels up Jackson, Tennessee way. State Representative William Tracy Arnold has proposed a ban in the Mississippi legislature on experimentation using human embryos in any hybrid project. The measure is part of a bill that would restrict abortion, human cloning, and assisted suicide. Arnold told WAPT.com he included the ban as a way to restrict embryo research, as if there was any great likelihood of any embryo research ever taking place in Mississippi, Stan. Have they even gotten the microscope fixed yet? This is his pull quote. Arnold said some countries are already doing some experimentation with embryos. The truth of the matter is they're experimenting with some animal genes and infusion in some other countries, and we just want to protect those embryos from that type of infusion and protect them. After all, they're living beings, I believe. Representative Arnold, repeat after me. Mon, san, toe, Monsanto, what? They give me some, hell, that's a fine, upstanding, godly company. But those are the ones who are putting the goat stomach gene into the potato, yeah, that crowd. Never mind, though. He's worried about the fetuses. News of the human-animal hybrid ban first surfaced earlier this week in a column in the Jackson Clarion Ledger, which questioned if Arnold's proposal was science fiction. Arnold denied that and said the discussion moved way far to the left and was not focused on his original intent of embryo protection. I'm glad I'm kind of tired. It sort of brings about a forced equanimity because I'm not up for furniture kicking tonight. Here we go, and as I think Beth said, this kind of explains it all. Arnold, a Logos Bible College graduate, Logos being nothing more than Greek for word, a Word Bible College graduate, Word, who is the senior pastor of the Vineyard Church, was first elected to the State House of Representatives in 2011, the Mississippi State House. On his state website, he notes that he is anti-abortion, an NRA member, and a member of the Farm Bureau. Isn't that kind of like making a mixed drink out of orange juice, grenadine, and kerosene? I'm sure the Farm Bureau is more than fond of Roundup Ready corn, genetically modified, you know, embryonically manipulated corn. Sure. And wouldn't you just love to take in a sermon or two down to the Vineyard Church? You know what it sounds like. Oh, I know you know what it sounds like. And he's anti-abortion. And I'm looking at a photo of him here. He apparently is from that branch of humanity that never evolved necks. You'd call him a redneck, except for the fact that he doesn't have a neck to be red. It's just shoulder, head. No, but at least we know the island of Dr. Moreau is not going to be what's left 1,000 years from now when most of Mississippi has been submerged. And I was all worried about that a little bit ago. Maybe if there's enough... Oh, no, but that means Mississippi's going to have to move somewhere. In a thousand years, do you suppose that anything resembling normal will have happened in Mississippi? Some of them are going to just have to leave. You know how the Mississippi Delta kind of fans out there? Yeah, it's not going to be there anymore. Just a big, wet, watery place. Looks like about 100 miles up the Mississippi River. No more New Orleans. Probably no more Baton Rouge. Mm-mm. No. Can 1,000 years cure Mississippi? I don't know. Sorry, Marty. Marty said, please say that last bit was from The Onion or other such. Nope. It's real. It's true. It's true. That's the thing. We look at news out of places like Mississippi. And we, oh, please let this be an Onion story. No, that's reality. Oh, and Marty has a small correction. The Idaho lawmaker wants children to not read Atlas Shrugged, but pass a test on Atlas Shrugged. According to the piece, the lawmaker said he did it to make a point. One wonders what the point is. And it's probably one of those points that only he could possibly explain. Yeah, because the rest of us are too Kenyan or too Muslim or have too deep-seated a hatred of white people or too anti-colonialist or whatever it is, we're too. Then this from Don, also in West Tennessee, not too far from Granny T. Enjoying the show tonight. Thank you. Thank you, Don. Regarding the AIC Act, have you thought about approaching Loretta Lynn for an endorsement or support? She's approaching 80, but being from Butcher Holler, coal miner's daughter and an original, greatly underappreciated West Virginia girl, and the possibilities are really endless. Write a song, sing that song, a video, revive her career, sell records and all. She may be interested. You might be surprised to know, Don, but there is that kind of outreach does go out. And I don't know that anybody's ever reached out to Ms. Lynn. But you find out real quick who your friends are, let's put it that way. People like the brilliant and engaging Ashley Judd, friend. Stella Parton, Dolly's sister, friend of Cole. Really. Who else? As much as I love his guitar work, Brad Paisley, West Virginian, friend of Cole. Kathy Matea, West Virginian, friend of Appalachia, friend. Apparently, Emmy Lou Harris is conversant with mountain, knows what mountaintop removal is, loathes it. But yeah, that kind of outreach does happen. Marty asking the question, Mississippi, change in 1,000 years? Are you expecting humans to be involved? Ooh, that's brutal. That's brutal. Nice little crowd in the chat room, by the way. Pop on by if you'd like to. Headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. It's about 4 minutes before the hour. Break time coming up. Let's see what we've got available here. kind of a little something enjoyable. Yeah, why not? Haven't done this in a while. We will try when we get back. We will make an attempt at using Skype if you wish to do so. We don't have to do that. I can fill a Bobster for a third hour. But we can make an attempt at Skype. You know the handle here, right? Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. And we'll see if we can get some conversation radio going. This is listener-supported conversation with Tracy, the lady cab driver, having added $25 to her challenge for the evening to help as Dim Leader once said, make the pie higher. Sometimes I think about those things and I'm like, did that really say that? Yes, he did. And we're going to make the pie higher. PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. You ever wonder where that phrase, blood red carpet, comes from? This.
knows that blood red carpet at Salem Church Christ. They gonna ever see no wedding between me and you. Zip up Tennessee, zip right down to Alabama. Got 350 heads on a 305 engine. I get 10 miles to the gallon. I ain't got no good intentions.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, that's not really the phone number anymore. Maybe someday we'll get the toll-free number out of Hawk. That sure would be nice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And it is Wednesday night. This is the 6th of February, 2013. To the mailbag, real quick. got a note in from Clayton. He said $25 met. The additional $25 of Tracy's Lady Cab Driver Challenge has been met, and it's on its way in the mail. Michael writes in, this is a dandy. The subject line just said zombie fetuses. Christian Science. Right-wing Christian host claims tiny dead babies embedded in women's wombs. What? Well, the story by from Right Wing Watch. Well, here's some medical research we hadn't heard about. Generations radio host Kevin Swanson, who last week delved memorably into feminist theory. Oh, God, there's a link. This I gotta see. Down the rabbit hole we go. Conservative radio hosts parse feminists. Some are cute, some are ugly. All are, and I quote, family-destroying whores.
That's only because they're thinking dirty thoughts that their wives will leave them.
On Tuesday's edition of Generations Radio, Kevin Swanson and Dave Buhner, no relation to John Boner, sat down in Swanson's basement studio to discuss a report they came across that claims, quote, rising college costs are driving a new trend called sugar daddies. This led to a wide-ranging discussion of the scourge of women's independence and a new unified field theory of feminism. There are two forms of feminism, according to Dave Buhner. There are cute feminists like Sarah Palin who will find jobs in the marketplace and get themselves a husband, but will never submit to the husband. In fact, they will use their power probably to make their husbands submit to them. And then there are the ugly feminists whose lack of attractiveness has not given them access to power that they wanted in the marketplace. These attractively challenged feminists will only find careers in academia and in government agencies. For instance, you can run the EPA. Oh, dear God. What all of these feminists have in common, Swanson argues, is, quote, all of them want to be free from the family, and together with the homosexuals are destroying society. Buhner speculates that in the future, feminism will be remembered as a, quote, time in which women lost the love of their children and decided to become selfish, narcissistic, family-destroying whores. This from the voice of the followers of the Prince of Peace. So that's what he did last week. This week, the claim is that certain doctors and certain scientists, as opposed to uncertain doctors and uncertain scientists, have researched the wombs of women on the pill and found, quote, there are these little tiny fetuses, these little babies that are embedded into the womb. Those wombs of women who have been on the birth control pill effectively have become graveyards for lots and lots of little babies.
What? Do these men have mommy issues?
They got everything issues, honey.
Dead babies.
Graveyards for lots and lots of little babies. Never mind all that science business about how, you know, Sammy the sperm meets Ethel the egg. No. I guess these are just little immaculate conceptions or something.
Well, you know, priests have...
Wait. Swanson, I'm beginning to get some evidence from certain doctors and certain scientists that have done research on women's wombs, and they've gone through the surgery, and they've compared the wombs of women who were on the birth control pill to those who were not on the birth control pill, and they found that with women who are on the birth control pill, there are these little tiny fetuses, these little babies that are embedded into the womb. They're just like dead babies. They're on the inside of the womb, and these wombs of women who have been on the birth control pill effectively have become graveyards for lots and lots of little babies. And then peoples... I don't know who Peoples is. We've actually heard on both sides of that. We're researching that and want to make sure we speak correctly to that in our second film. Oh, well, there's a movie involved. But, well, no one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. But we have medical advice on both sides of the table there, so we want to make sure that we communicate that properly. Yeah, make sure you communicate that properly. Oh, my God, Michael. Another of our Michaels. They've been hard at work lately. Earlier in the interview, Peoples and Swanson discuss how birth control came to be widely used and accepted by many churches. Women, Peoples laments, desire the men's role and are now missing out on the role God put them in that he laid out in Genesis. Before World War II, Peoples claims abortion, sterilization, eugenics, and birth control were all tied together until Hitler took the fall for taking it. Really? Hitler took a fall? Hitler was a fall guy? Whew. Where's that bottle of Old Panther? Until Hitler took the fall for taking it very aggressively and dramatically. I wish I was making this up. I really wish was that, but that this is another one of those where I'm going to get the note from Marty saying, and this is from The Onion too, right? Wrong, no. Robert writes from Australia. He says, Bob, I sat through the first part of the Atlas Shrugged film trilogy with my finger on the fast forward button. It was such a dull film. It was propaganda of the most sleep-inducing kind. To make children read the book is sure to put those children off reading forever. Then again, you know, the right wing would kind of like to do that. P.S., as I understand it, the first film was a commercial flop. The second, and probably the first, are being financed by some billionaire. P.P.S., I downloaded a free copy of the film from Pirate Bay. Pay for it? LOL. Oh, God. Atlas snoozed. Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, as you may be aware, the Republican legislature here in North Carolina gave me a birthday present on Monday by voting to cut unemployment benefits by a third from $535 a week to $350, and also shortening the payout period from 26 weeks to a floating 12 to 20. This is just the first salvo in the Republican's war on working people here in North Carolina. They've been winning that one for a while. It's going to be a wonderful 4 years right here behind the pulled pork curtain. We're already a right-to-work state. How much more can they screw over the workers? Stay tuned, says Ron and Raleigh, and strap in. Lord. Yeah, well, we all know the argument that unemployment benefits promote dependency. Sheesh. Because we can't just have unemployed people running around with $530 in their pocket to spend on, you know, stupid frivolous crap like rent and food. The stupid. It hurts us. Let us go to I thought we had Tracy here. Okay, how do I unhold the call? All right, I've never run across this with Skype before. hold on. Tracy, I'm gonna have to. Are you there?
Hey.
There you are. Yes.
You know, I don't know where that from. Can you hear me? Did I lose you?
No, I've got you.
Okay. So how are you doing? How are you feeling? How's everything?
I'm feeling good, kind of tired, but a really good day for the ACE Act.
Yeah, I'm. You know, I am more and more excited about that. I'm going to have to find out who my congressperson is. That is so awful that I don't know. I should know these things. I know who my senators are. But like I said, stuff keeps changing here, so hell, I don't know. But I am still going to write a letter to he. I do know it's a guy. I know he's white.
Excellent.
Hey, you know what? I probably know more. I know that's probably more than most people
well,
know.
Let's just look this up, though, Tracy.
What, oh, okay. What do I have to do?
What district are you in?
I'm in Sherman Oaks. I think I'm in. I don't know. I give you my zip code. I guess you could probably look it up by that. I don't care if anybody knows where I live.
Well, they have to do a little more narrowing just to get to from your zip code.
Zip code is 91423.
91423.
Trust me, I'm not hard to find in Sherman Oaks.
California Congressional District 27.
Okay.
Well, no, wait. It could be District 27. It could be District 28.
See? Who's in 27?
Well, I'm looking. I'm trying to find that out here. Probably have more luck. Here, let me.
Don't try this at home, boys and girls.
No, you can hurt yourself trying to do it on the radio.
Look, I'm just such. With myself that I can listen to you on Skype. I mean, on TuneIn, and I'm learning.
Hey, you're in good shape. It turns out, and it's not surprising because Tim was thrilled. One of the first folks to jump on board the ACE Act was Judy Chu, and she is the congresswoman for the 27th congressional district.
She is. Who's the 28th?
Okay, we will look at that and find out.
Judy Chu.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yes, so I've heard. But I don't remember voting for her.
28th is based in Adam Schiff.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's okay. Burbank, Glendale, Northern L.A., and parts of Central.
Okay. So either one of those, I will, because I will do a letter.
And he was on it. I'm not sure if he's back on it this time through or not. But I expect he will be.
You know, Californians, what can I say? You know, most of our elected officials do care about the environment. Thank you, God. So, yeah, I'm just listening
and
to the
And I understand
show.
That a little bit more, having at least seen a little bit of California now. You've got an environment out there that almost inspires you to care for it.
Well, like I said, when I told you how I went up to San Simeon for my mom's birthday back in November. And I was like, okay, this is worth fighting for. It, you know, like I said, I've driven the coast to Southern California and part of Northern California, but I've never driven around the Central Coast. And it's awe-inspiring. It's spectacular. And I'm looking forward to going up to the Redwoods. As a matter of fact, my sister, her boyfriend, is his 60th birthday this year, and they live up in Portland. So what Jen and I plan on doing, if I do wind up going to the Netroots Nation, is we're going to fly up to San Jose and then drive the rest of the way up to Portland and do the whole, you know, Redwoods and Santa Cruz and all that. So, yeah, you know, but when I see California, oh, and by the way, remember I think when I was talking about, you know, San Simeon back in November and I said I don't recycle, you'll be glad to know that I started recycling.
Yes.
Yay.
Yay you.
And today, guess what? I went to the grocery store today and yesterday and brought my own bags.
I have learned to do that too. Because here in D.C., they charge you a nickel if you want a bag.
See, in half the okay, where I live in Sherman Oaks, they still haven't started charging. But in Pasadena, they charge you a nickel a bag also. And so I don't do much shopping in Pasadena, even though I work out here quite a bit. I normally do my shopping once I get home. But I bought, and here's the bad part about the fact that I've had the recyclable, reusable shopping bags forever. I would just forget to put them in my car. So I made it a point, because I had at least like 20 of these bags from Trader Joe's and Ralph's and Kohl's and various and sundry stores. So I made an effort. I separated the bags, and I have bags in my car, in my cab, and I put bags in Jan's car. So whenever we go shopping, we have the bags. And you know what? It's so much nicer because those bags usually have, like, real handles that you can put over your shoulder.
Yep.
So it's easier to bring the groceries in the house as a result.
Yeah, nothing sucks quite like having that incredibly expensive bottle of, say, organic apple juice in a glass jar that goes through the bottom of the plastic bag and breaks into a million pieces and splashes all over the place.
As you're, like, lying, you know, crying on the ground going, why? Yeah.
And, you know, that's why wine bottles have that little divot in the bottom.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's called the punt. And that actually helps keep the bottle from breaking so easily.
Oh, well, was that something that Boehner did with his alcoholic ass with the Merlot?
No, I think his comes in a box, Tracy. You know, with a straw.
With a straw? I mean.
Or else it's the bottle's plastic with a screw top.
What is so funny? I get
sort of emails, Henry's Merlot, kind of off brandy.
I get emails from Randy Rhodes periodically, and apparently, Mr. Boehner said that our president is trying to annihilate the Republican Party, and Randy Rhodes like anybody that drinks as much as Boehner, should never try to say the word annihilate.
there are times that man just reminds me of an old Foster Brooks act. You remember Foster Brooks?
I love me some Foster Brooks. You know, between him and Dean Martin and W.C. Fields, nobody could play. But I don't know who played drunk better.
It's a different shtick.
It's a different one.
Fields was much more physical and much more practiced at actual intoxication.
Okay. Yeah.
But because his earliest career had been that of a juggler and tumbler in the circus.
That's right.
And even though he was a bigger man in later years, he still had amazing physical abilities to do sight gag comedy.
Okay. Hey, speaking of drunks and W.C. Fields and whatnot, I actually had a fair not a few months back that I took out to the rehab hospital that is, I guess, a big out here in Pasadena where W.C. Fields used to go to dry out.
Oh, really?
As a matter of fact, I think that Dr. Drew? I think his show, Celebrity Rehab, used to be filmed there. And, yeah, that's such a big success. Was. Such a big success. But, yeah, it's one of those wonderful, and it's a gloriously beautiful place, all, you know, woodsy, and, you know, they have the cabins and everything. But it's supposedly one of the bigger rehab hospitals out here in California. Go figure. But, yeah, you know, your show, I love listening to your show because it's so chock full of information. Like, you know, Elton the Gay. I think his name should be Elton the Gay. Because not just Elton, but Elton the Gay. I think he should have a collar.
But I go back and forth on that one, Tracy, because I don't know if it's possible. I mean, isn't the idea of homosexuality a human construct?
Yeah, that's the thing. thing.
In the rest
because
of the in the rest
like,
of the animal
how can you be a homosexual the, dog if you're not how can you be a homosexual if homo means man?
Or well, I mean, and that's the thing. It means man, but it also means same.
Right.
So like I remember when we were little. And everybody would giggle when they saw the sign outside the grocery store where they'd run out of room to spell out the rest of...
homogenous?
Genized, and it would just say homo milk. You know, homo milk, $2.19 a gallon, whatever.
Oh, Jesus Christ, superstar. Wow.
But really, I think if you kind of press on that issue just a little bit, you start questioning, and I'm not saying that same-sex conduct doesn't exist in the animal kingdom. It very obviously does, you know, witness what Dr. John was talking about with the bonobos. But
yeah.
We anthropomorphize that conduct into something that resembles a human structure, and that's wrong.
No, it's you know, like you said, it's wrong. And, you know, until you said it earlier, I didn't even think about it.
And Tracy, see, that's the thing. That there are even human cultures that didn't recognize it. It was a running gag among the Jesuits. I think I've mentioned this before. The Jesuits used to laugh about the fact that Polynesian peoples had no word for homosexuality in their vocabulary until the Jesuits came there and taught it to them.
Right.
And, of course, how the Jesuits taught it to them, well, that's part of the little ongoing problem that the church has. But it wasn't. That's not to say that it didn't exist in the culture. That is to say that they did not recognize the difference between sex and sex.
And sex and sex. And then there's, I don't know, sex. As a, you know, me being newly introduced into, you know, the gay world, because like I don't consider myself anything other than a human being who happens to love very much another person.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, by the way, a little bit of a diversion here. Jim has a question for you. He simply wants to know if you've ever been to Inverness, California.
Never even heard of it.
Well, now you have to go find it. Because Jim says it is truly stunning and beautiful.
How are we spelling that?
Inverness, just like the place in Scotland. Inverness.
You just said just like the place in Scotland, like I know places in Scotland.
I did do that, didn't I?
You just really did that.
Sorry.
You're like that place in Scotland.
Okay. Yeah, well, wait. Tracy is a fine old Scottish name. What are you talking about? I mean, I thought you were one of the black Celts. You know, there's red Celts and black Celts.
Well, you know, my name, Tracy Michelle Porter, so God only knows. From what I understand, Porter, and yes, I just said my name on national radio. Again, don't care. I'm on Facebook, so whatever.
you're one of that minority of people who actually operate outside of some sort of made up, you know, squirrel nut fuzzy butt, you know, weird handle.
Like,
and, you know.
I like my name. I think I have a pretty awesome name, especially since I spell my name with two E's. I think that because I give up it now because people, when I just say Tracy, you know, like when I go to Starbucks and every so often somebody asks me how to spell Tracy. And I tell them, they're like, wow, that's really cool. I'm like, yeah, because I'm pretty damn cool. But
I was just reminded in the chat room, by the way, that, and it was Stockton Larry reminded me. Yes, there are blah Celts.
Blah?
Blah.
Really?
Remember when Rick Santorum said that he did say that he didn't want to make black people richer, that he said blah people?
Black people. See, you know, it's so funny when you say stuff like, don't I remember? And no, I don't, because, see, it's like stuff like that just kind of rolls over my head. And
well, some of the stuff you work to get shed of.
Yeah, and it's like it sheds like my hair sheds. you know, once it shifts off of me, I don't think about it. You know, it's like when I wash, like this morning when I was getting up, and I guess, I don't know, I guess I'm going through the change because I'm having night sweats, and it's been cold here. And I am like every morning waking up drenched. And so every morning I get up and wash the sweat off, and I'm going, oh, my God, am I old? Am I old enough? Well, you're a guy. Why would you know if I'm old enough to be going through the change?
Right. See, that you just got me back for the whole Inverness, you know, like in Scotland thing. By the way, Tracy, we've moved into the geography portion of the program. Randy in Pennsylvania also wants you to know that there is an Inverness, Nova Scotia, where the Celtic games are held in summer.
Oh, and I must rush up to Nova Scotia.
Jim immediately clicked on your last name and says, hey, remember Cole Porter? Good name.
Yeah, Cole Porter and what's his name? The brother that started the international workers for the Pullman workers. I mean, his name isn't Porter, but, you know, they were Porters.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff like that. Oh, speaking of which,
one of my favorite beer styles, by the way.
Exactly. Oh, as a matter of fact, I had a layover years back in Utah. Where was I coming from that I was even anywhere near Utah? Vegas? Hell, I don't know. Then I had a layover in Salt Lake City. But there was a beer, I think it's called Porter Ale or something, and of course anything that has Porter in it I had to buy. And it's like Porter Ale, everyone should have one, you know. Something like that. Something, you know, mentioning about, you know, polygamy. Polygamy ale. That's
yes,
what it was. Polygamy
the, porter. Yeah, there's a polygamy porter. I was in Utah for a little more than 48 hours a couple of years ago, and ran across polygamy porter.
Right. So
Oh dear. This seems to be the.
Learning very much, or I haven't had a beer or a soda in a week, and I'm actually not going through withdrawals, which is shocking, but it was so funny. I was talking to a customer of mine about, you know, slowly cutting soda out of my diet, and we were talking about how, you know, how much sugar soda has, and she goes, you know, soda is a gateway drug. The next thing you know, you'll be on the corners scratching your neck, trying to get, you know, cake and Twinkies. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
and
it's worse. It's like you never quit.
You know, it's just, I love sugar, but I love my health more because yesterday I went to the doctor, and even though I have been overweight for the last, I don't know, 15 years of my life, I have never had an issue with cholesterol. As a matter of fact, my doctors are just stunned with my, you know, my sugar count and my cholesterol and all that. Well, yesterday I got the hammer dropped on me. My bad cholesterol was up. Not by much, but enough that my doctor put me on, oh, God, Crestor.
Yeah, and now you got to be careful because that stuff's hard on your liver.
Right, but he's like, I was just, I almost started crying because I'm like, I've been fat for so long and not having to worry about my cholesterol. And I'm like, okay, this is messed up. I'm going through the change and now my cholesterol levels are up. Who freaking Ray? I'm like, wow. But I will be 47 years old this year. And so I am getting to that age where I really have to start paying attention to what I put in my body. And so I'm like, wow. Oh, before I forget, who was the person that I was supposed to be looking up to, that was the father of Black History Month?
Oh, Carter Woodson.
Yeah, that's right, Carter Woodson. Okay. So, but, yeah, we got the gay dogs, but, you know, but they can't be gay. I don't know. Enough of that one. So I was listening to the Green Report about, and I kind of cut it out on that, about, so the oil companies did not have a record profit this quarter. What happened? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Maybe it had something to do with that floating oil platform, the banging around on the coast of Alaska and Canada.
Well, the one
they put up there is a tax dodge.
Okay, because see, here's my issue with them crying, you know, cry me a frickin' river. Just 2 weeks ago, gas was, I paid $3.49 for regular gas 2 weeks ago. The cheapest I've found so far for gas, for regular unleaded gas, is $3.97.
Whoa.
Yeah, because they're saying, well, they've got to start switching back to the summer blend or whatever. I'm like, lying.
You know, that's what I love. That's another one of those things I love about things like the Tesla and the Nissan Leaf. And
I'm telling you.
There's no summer blend. You don't have to switch over to a summer blend for the Nissan Leaf.
And I'm looking forward to the day that I can, because living in an apartment, there's a lot of electric charging stations, a lot up everywhere in L.A. pretty much, especially in Santa Monica and Pasadena.
Well, battery technologies are going to have to get a lot better before something like someone like a cab driver can use anything except a hybrid.
Oh,
I mean, you're seeing
a hybrid. And now, we do have hybrid taxis in LA.
Oh, I'm seeing more and more. It used to be all the cabs that you saw here in DC were either a Crown Vic, a Mercury Marquis, or a Lincoln Town Car, because they're basically all the same car they're all on the same frame. And just intensely reliable, long term, lead sleds, great cars, but they're kind of gas guzzly. And now you're seeing more and more Priuses out here on the mean streets of D.C. And I saw a ton of them in San Francisco.
Yeah, they're getting. See, right now the only problem right now is that they don't really have any hybrid minivans, and we still need those.
Well, the closest you can get is the Prius V.
And that's not big enough.
And that's still a five-seater. Now, the other thing that's out there, and you can get it with a third-row rear seat, I think, is the Toyota Highlander Hybrid.
Not big enough.
Not big enough.
Mm-mm. No, because, like, right now, what am I driving? I'm driving a Dodge Caravan, I think. Yeah, Dodge Caravan. So,
you've got to have something that you can modify for special needs as well.
Right, and that's the thing. And until that happens, we're still going to be using what we use. But out here, we still have Crown Vics. Some of them are CNG, which is good. And then we have the Priuses. The only problem is with the Priuses, again, the size-wise, I mean, it's great for the economy. I mean, for ecology. But the problem is when people have a lot of luggage, that's the beautiful thing about that Crown Vic. You could put how many bodies in that trunk?
Well, and now bear in mind, I've had a lot of rave reviews written to me, or not a lot, but we've got two members of the Horn family, three actually. We got Ray and Kim, and they drive a Chevy Volt, and our buddy Dr. Allen down in Texas drives a Chevy Volt, and both of them have rave reviews to offer on that automobile.
Oh, yeah.
And there's good trunk space in there too.
In those. And see, that's the thing. We're hoping that they'll start getting those, because right now all the owners and the companies are getting the Priuses, and that's the only hybrid that they're buying. They're not buying, like you said, the larger hybrids, which gets, you know, like you said, crazy.
Well, the Volt is going to have to come down in price some, and that'll happen as more people buy into it, because right now it's around $42,000, I think.
How much? 40? Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
By the way, you're getting a little bit of a chiding from our buddy Robert in Australia.
Okay, what do I do now?
Well, subject line: petrol prices. You know,
okay, let me shut up. That's right. Okay, I already know where that's going.
Yeah,
okay,
Bob, no offense to anyone, but the U.S. has some of the cheapest petrol on the planet. I imagine it is just a little bit annoying to hear
you know, us fussy Americans out here complaining about $3.97 a gallon when it's upwards of, you know, going north of $9 a gallon in the rest of the world, which is actually a more realistic price per gallon than what we pay here, because that $3.97 a gallon has a whole bunch of corporate welfare built into it.
A whole bunch of it. A whole bunch of it. A whole bunch of it. And let him know, I don't know if he heard me the other day, but I am coming to Australia Christmas 2014. So he can chide me all he wants in person. I figured that by the time I get there, he's probably going to have a list of things that I've said that he could talk bad to me about, you know. But I just, you know, I, again, am so grateful for your show. Because of your show, I've heard about things like Netroots Nation, which I would never have heard about if it hadn't been for your show. And I'm so excited that they're going to be in San Jose. And also, I found out that they have scholarships.
Yes, they do.
And so I wrote to them about scholarships.
Oh, and that is a tough competition.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. I mean, I will still probably go as soon as my sister makes up her freaking mind about when this birthday party is going to be, because I just, they have one, a general scholarship, and then they have one for LGBT.
Oh.
Yeah. And I guess I'm in that category now. Uh-huh.
Well, for my part, we just have to figure out a way to scare up the funds to do it. I think, I think, for instance, from the standpoint of the AIC Act, it could be one of the most important things we do this year, to be there and be tabling and have a couple of laptops out and let people sit there and use the laptop at the AIC Act table, and from right there, right then, send a letter to their member of Congress saying, I'm here at Netroots Nation, and I'm telling you right now, I want you to sign on to this thing, and I want this bill passed.
And I want it, and I want it, and I want it now.
Precisely.
Because it's so, you know, I think about Mountaintop, and that's another thing. Had I never found your show, I would have never have heard of Mountaintop Removal. It would have been something that was just foreign to me way out here in California. These things are so important, so much more important than whether Hillary has gotten a facelift or if Kim Kardashian is a straight-up hoe. Because she is.
Right, yes.
Or about anything about Honey Boo Boo or all my babies, all my mama's babies, mammy, daddy, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Robert from Australia wrote back in. He said, I would never chide Tracy. I love her calls. but he does want to know, where in Australia are you planning to visit?
It's still up in the air. We're probably doing Melbourne, Sydney, and, you know, See, this is the beautiful part about maybe actually knowing somebody in Australia, because that way somebody can email me about where I should visit and all that good stuff.
You know what? And if Robert has suggestions, I will forthwith forward them on to you.
Most definitely.
Because, of course, I'll be traveling vicariously. It's one of the See, you were talking about all the things you get out of the program. One of the things that I get out of the program and out of this little community, this little family that we've built, is that I get to vicariously experience all kinds of places all over the world. And it's
awesome. It's awesome. Because, like you said, you may never get to these places, but to know that you know people who are going there or who already live there. And this little part of, you know, here you are in this little part of West Virginia. I'm in Los Angeles. Robert's in Australia, and we have people in the UK. It gives me hope that we are going to be okay.
Yeah. You have to have a look. You cannot simply try to solve problems with the default position being, we're screwed, this probably won't work. You have to have, if not hope, and if not faith,
than at least a little bit of determined optimism, if we can call it that.
Well, it's like I'm going to be on your part of the coast in March. I am visiting again, going to my brother's house in Atlanta, which I am so very much looking forward to, because I have to say, I just love Atlanta. I just absolutely love the place.
I love flying, well, flying in from the west and driving in from the west. I'm reminded of what Louis Grizzard used to call it. He called it the city in the park.
And it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, you know, there's forests all around it. And the downside of Atlanta is that it's not a very people-y city. I mean, you know, you walk around in San Francisco, there's people on the streets all over the place. You know, people moving along doing living in a city kind of things.
Exactly.
Atlanta is a very, very car place.
Just like L.A.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. And both cities have equally damnable traffic problems.
The only good thing, the only difference, because it takes my brother to talk about Atlanta traffic, because he's like, you know, L.A. traffic is bad, but at least we have freeways pretty much going everywhere. Whereas in Atlanta, it's highways and a lot of just roads. So you could be stuck in traffic on a regular street that's a highway. I still don't understand how that kind of works. And it could take you forever because they don't really have the freeway system that we have out here in L.A. Oh, there's a park, Carter Woods and Hawks Park. Okay, see, another thing I have to do when I, you know, go to the East Coast. But I don't know where else I could listen to anything, and the fact that I can cuss. I've been really good today about cussing. Have you noticed?
You have.
Because.
And we're all proud. Well, okay. A few members of the Horn family are thinking, why isn't she swearing? It's so fun when she swears.
I know. Because I'm getting myself together. Because, like I said, next Wednesday, I found out exactly. Next Wednesday, I am going to try out for Wheel of Fortune. They're
right.
Doing this big tryout thing out at Morongo Casino, which is awesome because I get to go gamble and probably go on to the Wheel of Fortune. Yay. I've become really good at three-card poker. As a matter of fact, I went to Vegas in January for my baby sister's birthday and managed to win, how much did I wind up winning? $750.
Nice.
Playing three-card poker. And so I'm like, I'm just like, ooh.
I get near those tables and I begin to sweat and my heart begins to race and it just, you know, I am not meant to gamble and I know it.
See, here's the thing about this is how my take on gambling. I only take a certain amount of money. I leave my ATM cards and all that stuff where I can't get to them.
I could listen, if they had a Go Fish table in a casino, I could lose money there, okay?
But see, this is my take on gambling. My take on gambling is the same take that I have on lending people money. I never gamble or lend more than I can afford not to get back.
Exactly.
Because, you know, there's always that relative, you know, that needs to borrow money. And, you know, they'll come to me and I'm like, okay, well, Tracy, I need this much. And I'm like, okay, then I do the math in my head as to, okay, what can I afford that if they don't give it back to me, I won't go, you know, lacking, because I've done that. I've had people that, you know, because believe it or not, I can be a nice and giving person. Just don't let that get out. And
yeah, you're like Agnes that way. You know, she hates for people to know that she's got the soft marshmallow center. And, mm-hmm. and so that's why mm-hmm. she spends so much time working on her tough Kevlar exterior.
Yeah, that exactly. So I've since, and I would give, and when I said give till it hurts, it was because I would give loan somebody money, and then it would hurt me in the far run or the short run or what have you. So what I started, I got smart, and when somebody say, well, Trace, I need this amount of money, and then I would do, and your math is about as good as, my math is about as good as yours. Maybe my math is maybe just a little better, only because of me having to constantly compact change and whatnot in the cab. and my paperwork of adding and subtracting, so I've gotten much better with my money figuring. But, so I do it in my head, like, oh, okay, you need this much? Okay, well, this is what I can give you. And I say, oh, but it's a, no, no, you know, this is okay, this is what I can give you. It's kind of like what years ago I got a customer who got in my cab wanting to go somewhere, and he's like, well, I only have $20, and where he wanted to go was like a $40 ride. And I said, well, I will take you as far as your $20 will go. And so when we got to the point where his $20 would go, he's like, well, I said I needed to go here. And I said, well, I said this is as far as your $20 will take you. And it miraculously, he came up with the rest of the money to get to where he had to go that I can't demand it up front.
It was a little miracle.
It was an, it was like, you know, it was like the fish in the loaves. It was like turning wine, you know, water into wine kind of thing. It was like, wow, you know, that 20 turned into 40. Isn't that amazing? You know, so this is how I do things. But again, like I said, I am just, you know, I think I'm rambling, but I am just so, you don't realize, like, on those times that I can't get, you know, hear you because I can't figure out how to do stuff on my phone. Or, you know, I tried to call your phone number the other day, and it said that it's disconnected. That can't be right. Not the 800 number, but the 304 number.
Yeah, that can't be right.
So, and I have it in my phone, so I was like, that doesn't, or, you know, I'm like, that can't be right. It might have just been one of those funny-ass recordings. But I just, like, it just, you don't
know
how.
You know what it probably is?
Mm-hmm.
The whole studio is powered down right now. Nothing's going in.
Okay, well, that might be it. But you just don't realize this, how you, listening to you, even though sometimes I could only hear you maybe once a month or every other week or whatever, live, you just don't know how you help keep me sane.
That's just about the kindest thing anybody's said in a while. And
you know, you keep me sane. You keep me from, you know, when I hear somebody say something stupid in the back of my cab about, you know, gun control and why we don't need it. And I have those what would Bob do moments. And because if it was a what would Tracy do moment, I'd pull over and bitch slap somebody. But you being you, you would say, now, Tracy, you just can't go randomly around slapping people just because they're stupid. Because if we slap people every
Don't slap the fares, Tracy.
Oh, this is after. Yes, well, you see, that's the thing. You know, you talk me back. You talk me down. You keep me from slapping people. And I appreciate you. And that is why whenever I have.
Are you telling me I'm like Bob Kincaid, the Bob Kincaid, the cabbie whisperer?
The cabbie whisperer, yes. Yes, and I cannot tell you how many times I've had you guys on, and I can, you know, when I figure out how I can listen to you through the radio in the car, and my customers, you know, that I glean that I can listen to you guys without them, you know, throwing up in the back of my cab because they're right-wing diggits. They come, you know, especially like, you know, on my airport days when we're driving, you know, in the streets of L.A. with the bumper-to-bumper traffic. They're like, oh, who is this coming? The dulcet tones of Bob Kincaid.
The liberal stylings. Oh, my God. Agnes is going to make me put a C-clamp on my head. I'm getting such a swelled head out of this.
Is your head blowing up?
No, I got big old alien head right now.
Well, here's the deal. Like I said, I know you guys are in D.C., but as soon as you get home, like I said, I am going to melt. You know,
oh, no, no. No, the word has gone out about the butter toffee.
So if I send it to the P.O. box, it won't be an issue, yes?
I'll shoot you a note.
Okay, okay.
Because okay. I want to make sure I actually lay hands on it.
Yeah, because one of the things I do that I love to do is cook. And cooking for me is an expression of how much I love people. And nothing shows love more, because like that was everybody's Christmas gift this year. I have never done this before. I did the spicy hot cocoa, which I'm going to send that to you too, and the butter toffee. for all my siblings and my mom.
Yeah, see, I'll have to go hide with that. It's like the tin of roasted almonds that
right.
that Paul sent back in December for Christmas. Yeah, that was Ferg in the background saying, "Oh my goodness." Yeah, I mean, it was this huge tin of almonds, and in fact, he offered one as an incentive for a listener, and I think, yeah, it was Michael who took him up on that. You know, they were vegan friendly, they were made by hand, they were blanched, they were roasted, they were seasoned. And I mean, it was like watching piranhas work to see what we did to that tin of almonds.
So we're talking locusts?
Oh yeah, nothing left. Nothing.
Nothing. Not even the carcass. It's just.
Oh no, even we wound up consuming the scent out of that, you know, out of what remained at the bottom of the tin.
Well, see, these are those. But see, nothing says love like food.
Oh no, and, no, it absolutely not. Hey Tracy, I hate.
I know you got to go.
Yeah, I got a boogie here because we're fresh out of radio.
But anyway, you guys keep, you know. It's a coming, so shoot me that note with the address when you guys
absolutely
are
and thank and thank you for the initial challenge, and thank you for adding that other $25. It was Clayton wrote in the minute I mentioned it and pushed that over the top. Thank you so very much.
You don't have to thank me for doing what's right.
Well, yeah, I got to thank you anyway, and I got to thank everybody. Thank you, Tracy, and have a wonderful evening and drive safely.
Always.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
The lady cab driver from Southern California, if you ever got to get a cab getting away from LAX, that's who you want behind the wheel. It is time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for helping us meet last night and tonight's fundraising goals. It is deeply appreciated. It is how we manage to stay on the air. Thanks to all of you for your ideas and the precious time that you spend in this little community, this little family we've built over the years. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes for help with the posts, too. Thanks to John Fox. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. You can go there, and you can help us bring an end to Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn. Together.